Okay, thank you. The talk I'm going to present today is called Strategic Use of Fluorogen in Cotton, and I'll be presenting some evidence that shows that this flowering hormone is a potential way to terminate vegetative growth in the plant and synchronize flowering, possibly for the benefit of creating a more annualized cotton plant. Before I go on, I'll just point out that some of the concepts that I'm going to be talking about are in the last chapter of this book in the Cotton Foundation reference series, and I think copies are in the boxes at the back of the room, so you know, if you're interested, you can get a little bit of background information from here. So starting with a quick introduction of what fluorogen is. Fluorogen is, it's actually one of the very first hormones that was proposed in plant physiology. Goes back all the way to the time of auxin and everything else. Originally, the term fluorogen was put forward, proposed by Mikhail Chelykin, a scientist working in Russia. I'm trying to get my pointer to work here. Okay, might go back to the finger pointer approach. So what fluorogen does, it's a flower-inducing hormone, which is, in response to photoperiod, it's produced in the leaves, which measure the photoperiod, and then that fluorogen signal moves through the phloem translocation stream to the meristems, where it participates in converting vegetative meristems into floral meristems, okay? And although the hormone was proposed way back, it was the terminology came forward in 1936, it wasn't until 2007 that the compound was actually identified, and it was actually found not to be a canonical hormone, but rather it's a small 19 kilodalton protein, which is produced in the leaves and moves through the phloem. So my talk is basically going to cover two main subjects. We're going to first talk about how we have used this fluorogen compound in a technology that I call virus-induced flowering, which is potentially a tool that breeders might find particularly useful. And then the second part of the talk is going to focus more on how this compound can be used to synchronize growth and generally make the plant more determinant. Okay, so as everybody in the cotton field is very aware, wild cotton, ancestral cotton, it's actually a photoperiodic perennial plant, okay? But the modern lines that we grow, particularly here in the temperate United States, have been bred for day neutrality, and they're grown as an annual row crop. And of course, we've seen lots and lots of pictures of that this morning. So the ancestral lines, being photoperiodic, what they do is they will stay vegetative throughout the summer months, and when the days start to get short in the autumn, that's when they receive the signal to start flowering. They will flower and fruit over the mild winters, and then the following year, when the day length becomes long again, they will revert back to a vegetative growth habit. The domesticated lines, on the other hand, we plant them in the spring, they flower throughout the summer, and by the autumn, we're already taking that crop off the field. Okay, so this perennial annual dichotomy that we have in the cotton plant is a source for some frustration in producers. We'll talk about that a little bit more. But from the perspective of breeding, we have a little bit of a problem in that our modern lines have finished flowering when our ancestral lines have only started flowering. Okay, now that's of course only a problem if you're interested in introgressing ancestral traits into modern cotton lines. If you're just taking modern cotton lines and breeding them back and forth, well, they are going to be flowering at the same time anyways. Okay, so I'll just take you through a few experiments that we did with what we call virus-induced flowering, and what we've got here on the left-hand side, we have a typical modern line. This is Delta Pine 61. And over here on the right-hand side, we have an ancestral variety, Texas 701. You see the structures of the plant are very different. These are greenhouse-grown plants, 16-hour days, so these are definitely long-day photoperiods. The ancestral line, as you would expect, is completely vegetative. There's not a single flower on there, whereas the modern line, Delta Pine 61, started to flower around node 5 and then has flowers throughout the structure of the plant. Okay, so what exactly is virus-induced flowering? What we want to do is we want to take this florigen compound, this flowering hormone, and we want to deliver it to the ancestral plants so that it will move through the phloem and it will convert those vegetative meristems into floral meristems. Okay, so essentially what we want to do is we want to uncouple photoperiodic flowering from photoperiod. Okay, so the way we went about doing this is we started with a Gemini virus called cotton leaf crumple virus. This was developed by Rich Tuttle and Candace Hagler and Nikki Robertson at North Carolina State University, And what we do is we have that engineered virus. We infect the leaves of the plant. The virus naturally moves through the plant, through the phloem system. And in addition to that, the florigen gene, which is encoded by the gene is called flowering locus T from Arabidopsis, that gene product also moves through the phloem. Okay, so we have the virus moving through the phloem and we have the small protein moving through the phloem. So eventually that signal is going to get to the vegetative meristem, it's going to induce a signaling cascade, and ultimately that vegetative meristem is going to convert to a floral meristem. This next figure just shows it's the actual viral construct that we work with. Gemini virus is a bipartite virus, so it has both an A genome and a B genome. And what we do on the A genome is that we take out the coat protein and we replace that coat protein gene with our flowering locus T. That's the florigen gene. In this way, the virus is disarmed because that virus coprotein is required for white fly transmission from plant to plant. Okay, so the virus will move through the plant, but it cannot move from plant to plant unless you really work hard to get it to move. Okay, so does the technology work? In a nutshell, the answer is yes. What we have here is, I'll start over here on the right-hand side. This is our mock-infected Texas 701. Completely vegetative. The bamboo stake in that pot is 6 feet. And then next to it, we have our infected plant with the virus that carries the flowering locus T gene. And what those arrows are pointing to is not all of them, but some of the floral structures that are on that plant. Okay, so essentially we've taken what otherwise would be a completely vegetative plant and we've got it growing in a completely reproductive fashion. Over there on the far left, that is a fertile flower from this plant. And, of course, what you can do then in a breeding program, you can take that fertile flower, you can apply the pollen to an emasculated, domesticated line, you get a boll, the boll ripens, and, of course, the seed within that boll are your F1 progeny plants. Okay, so is the cross effective? Well, yes, it is. What I didn't explain at the beginning is that the Texas 701 line has a very dominant okra leaf phenotype, whereas Delta Pine 61 has a regular cotton leaf morphology. And in the F1 progeny, you get a mixture of those two phenotypes. Okay, so these are just some phenotypic evidence to show that, yeah, our cross was effective. In the middle, if we look at the flowering time, with respect to node of first fruiting branch, the Delta Pine 61 is flowering by the fifth or sixth node. Texas 701, the asterisk at the top there shows that after 25 nodes, we still haven't got a flower on it, which is expected because it's a photoperiodic line. And the F1 progeny is intermediate. Okay, so again, it will start to flower around node 15 under these long day conditions. Looking over here on the right-hand side, that at the top is a typical Delta Pine 61 flower, completely cream-colored. Here at the bottom is the F1 progeny, and you'll notice that the F1 progeny has the magenta flower spots that are typical of the ancestral line, again, implying that, or not implying, but showing that we have had an effective cross. Now, the gel image that I have down here is actually quite important as well, because What this is showing us here, we'll just focus on the middle bands, the middle lanes of the gel that are labeled for the F1 progeny. What we're doing here is we're looking for the rep gene from the viral protein. Okay, so what this is showing us is that the progeny plants are completely devoid of virus. Okay, now that's not too surprising because it's fairly well known that these Gemini viruses are not transmitted through the germline. Okay, they're not transmitted to the egg cell, they're not transmitted through the pollen, and so the progeny are virus-free. But the upshot of that is that although we used a recombinant virus for this technology, the progeny plants are not GMOs, depending on how you define GMO, okay? The progeny plants do not contain any recombinant DNA. So in principle, this technology could be used in an organic or conventional breeding program where, or in countries where transgenic plants are not permitted. Now, that's the virus-induced flowering part of my talk. I'm going to transition a little bit and talk about the overall determinant versus indeterminate growth habit of the cotton plant. What do I actually mean when I talk about determinacy and indeterminacy? On a very fundamental level, you've got two types of shoot meristem in a plant. In the case of an indeterminate meristem, you've got a population of stem cells which will continue as a population of stem cells through the life of the plant. In the case of a determinant meristem, what happens is that the cells in that meristem, they'll divide and they'll remain stem cell-like for a certain period of time, but eventually all the cells in that meristem are going to undergo a terminal differentiation and growth is going to stop. Okay, so if we're talking about a vegetative meristem, that vegetative meristem is going to continue to produce leaves, nodes, internodes, axillary buds, and so on for the life of the plant. In the case of a determinate meristem, what happens is that the stem cells, frequently what happens is that that meristem is a floral meristem, and the stem cells that are at the center of that meristem ultimately differentiate into the gynecium tissue of the flower. Okay, so the flower is a terminal or determinant structure, whereas a branch is an indeterminate structure. So normally what happens, now here I definitely want my pointer, normally what happens in the cotton plant is that the main stem has an indeterminate apical meristem. It remains indeterminate for the life of the plant, and that's a monopodial meristem. Okay. Now on the fruiting branches, when that fruiting branch first starts to grow out, it is a vegetative meristem. That's not going to work, excuse me. If I could come over here, I think you can still hear me. Essentially what we've got is we've got a vegetative meristem. Okay, now as that vegetative meristem grows out, what happens is the apex converts to a flower, and it is the axillary meristem that then continues the vegetative growth of that fruiting branch. Okay, so that top branch there is vegetative, the vegetative fruiting branch. The second branch is it's terminated by a flower, and it's the axillary bud which is continuing that growth. Okay, and that's called a sinfonial growth habit because we have these sinfonial units. Each unit is terminated by a flower, and growth is continued by the axillary meristem. Okay, so what do we see when we do our virus-induced flowering? Well, we start to see flowers where normally you would not see them. Okay, we start to see determinate meristems where normally you would see indeterminate meristems. So if you look at the second diagram there, we have a flower developing directly on the main stem. Okay, normally that does not occur in cotton. That is the position where a fruiting branch would normally be. In the second figure, what we have is a fruiting branch which is terminated by two flowers, and then there's no more vegetative growth on that fruiting meristem. Okay, and we think what's happening there is both the apical meristem and the axillary meristem are converting to floral fate at roughly the same time. So there's never that opportunity to continue the sympodial unit. In the last and third figure, what we've got is a, again, it's a fruiting branch which ends in a cluster of three flowers. In the photograph, it's hard to make out that there are three flowers there, but there are. And we think what's happening in this case is that both the apical meristem and at each axle, there's actually two axillary meristems. So the apical meristem and the two axillary meristems are simultaneously converting to floral fate, terminating the vegetative growth and giving you a cluster of flowers. Okay, so the plant is more determinant with respect to flowering, but when we talk about determinacy, we're not just talking about flowering and vegetative growth. We can also talk about determinacy when we talk about stem growth or even when we talk about leaf formation. So because the Texas 701 plant is very highly determinant, am I out of time?
Yeah.
I'm out of time. Jeez, I'm really sorry. Okay, I'm going to skip over this really quickly then. What we've got is that lobed shape of the leaf also becomes more determinant. So instead of these highly characteristic ochre-shaped lobes, we get a very lanceolate type leaf. And this is mimicked in a photoperiod experiment. So if we go from long day to short day and back to long day, we see the same effect. I want to take a little bit of time with this because this is the important part of the talk, actually. When we talk about synchronizing flowering, what we're talking about here is if we have our mock-infected plant on the left-hand side, the circles represent maturing bowls, whereas the arrows represent developing flowers. Okay, so on a typical cotton plant, you have this gradient of maturity within the bowls, and this creates problems when it comes down to harvesting the bowls, particularly with respect to fiber quality and consistency of fiber. In our infected plant, what's happened is that we have terminated the vegetative growth early, and so consequently, we do not have new flowers forming, we do not have new bowls forming. Instead, the only flowers that are on there, or the only fruit that's on there, are the ripening bowls. Okay, so we've synchronized flowering by terminating new growth. This isn't unique to cotton. This work is also shown in tomato. That's what this slide represents. And I'm actually just going to leave it there because I am out of time. I do want to thank Cotton Incorporated for their financial support for this. And most of this work has been carried out by Dr. Roisin McGarry in my laboratory. Sorry about that.
Thank you.